Art Briles is out as the coach of Baylor. What does that mean for the Bears' season? All that and more on episode 2 of The Hard Count. So our first story of the day kicks off. UCLA signed a new deal with Under Armour, and it is the biggest one in college sports history. The biggest shoe/apparel deal in college sports history. It is a 15-year, $280 million deal. And this led to UCLA star quarterback Josh Rosen putting on a post on his Instagram that said, "We're still amateurs, right?" And the university getting $280 million over 15 years, which is pretty close to about $19 million a year for just wearing a type of clothes. Now, UCLA used to be sponsored by Adidas, I believe, for a long time. Josh Rosen, UCLA quarterback, the coach told him a little while ago that he's, quote-unquote, going down the same path as Johnny Manziel after Rosen wore a bleep Trump hat to a golf course, a Trump golf course, for that matter. So just kind of an interesting story to kick off the day. UCLA, they might not be at their highest point in recent memory, but still enough to get the biggest apparel/shoe deal of all time. Now, the number two story of the day, well, not the number two story, but our second story of the day, comes from the Pac-12, where they have told ESPN and Fox that they would like to limit the number of games that are shown after 10 o'clock Eastern time, that start after 10 o'clock Eastern time, which is really good for me because past few years, Pac-12 games start 10:30, 11. You end up not being able to go to sleep until like 1 a.m., 1:30 a.m., maybe 2 a.m. some nights. So I feel like this is a good thing. There's no real losers here except there really isn't, except for maybe the competition, because this could be, mean that there's less TV spots midday, more teams get booted out. So I guess, at least for the upper-level teams, it's all plus, but if you look at the mid-major schools, they might get booted out because the Pac-12 games are moving up. But I think all in all, it's a good thing, and this should try and decrease the amount of quote-unquote East Coast bias there is, because Christian McCaffrey last year, all of his games started at like 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock Eastern. He was really, maybe should have won the Heisman, in my opinion, but not a lot of people were able to stay up and watch his games. Not their fault, but they have jobs, they have school, they have to, I guess Heisman voters don't have school, but they have jobs, so they have to go to sleep, and they're not able to watch Christian McCaffrey play, and I feel like that did have a big impact on his Heisman voting last year. So there are a few losers, but all in all, definitely a big thumbs up for me. I can go to sleep earlier, and Pac-12 can get more exposure. So our final story of the day, which is not this one, but later, is kind of a depressing one. So I figured I would lift you guys up with some great news. You've probably already heard it by now. It's been all over social media, ESPN, all the news sites. But James Conner announced that he was cancer-free. James Conner, the Pittsburgh Panthers football player, and he was targeting the North Carolina game for possible returns, and he said that the cancer is in remission, he's done with his chemo, and that's fantastic news. I will probably be able to see him play in, I don't know what month, but he comes to Charlottesville for Pitt versus UVA. I live in Charlottesville, and UVA season ticket holder. It's kind of depressing over the past few years, but I will definitely go to the Pitt game. I might even be able to talk to him. But he's a former ACC Player of the Year, 2014, I think. Yeah, and I think this is just all-around great news and definitely just a motivation to get through your day because he overcame something so crazy, and I think he's going to be able to get back to 100% and have a great season. I would predict a first team, second team, all ACC year for James Conner. This is a question I've gotten asked a lot before. The Pac-12 North or the SEC West? This isn't really a topic, just a question I wanted to answer. Because it's been close. Last year, the Pac-12 was definitely deeper than the SEC. You can make the case that the Pac-12 is better than the SEC because the SEC East is awful, but Oregon State, Washington State. Washington State and Washington are both going to be pretty good this year, but the past few years, those three teams, Oregon State, Washington State, and Washington, have not been doing as well. Washington's sort of been coming up, as has Washington State, like I said, but Oregon State was like 2-10, maybe 3-9 last year. I have to look that up, but and so in the past few years, you've been able to make a case for the Pac-12 North, but this year, I don't see how you can, sure, Washington's going to be a lot better this year, Washington State too, so it could be a deeper team, but Oregon has quarterback troubles. I don't know really where Stanford's going to go, and there's just a lot of teams in that division that it's hard to see comparing that to the SEC West. Pac-12 North, this is probably going to be a mediocre year for the top teams this year, whereas the SEC West, you could see LSU winning a national title for the first time since like 2012, 2013. So I don't really see the case of the Pac-12 North being better than the SEC West. Then again, people are going to say this is East Coast bias, but the last story, that's going down this year. So we'll be able to really see for sure. Most people will be able to see the Pac-12 play. And also, the last team in the Pac-12 North, Colorado. So they've had not great years recently. But like I said, Pac-12 overall, maybe better than the SEC. But just Pac-12 North, I don't think that would be better than the SEC West, because Pac-12 North, UCLA is on the rise. Arizona State's on the rise. Arizona is kind of in a rebuilding year. I don't see them being too good, but USC is probably going to have the best team they've had in a few years. Cal has lost a lot, but in the draft, but they get a good transfer from Texas Tech quarterback Davis Webb. And Utah is a team I'm going to talk about a little later in one of my segments, but we'll put that away for later. But overall, the SEC is better than the Pac-12. Definitely the SEC West is better than the Pac-12 North. Because the SEC East is kind of garbage, but Tennessee's looking to have a good year. I know every year they're way hyped up over season, and then they end in the offseason, and then they tank. But I think this might be the year that we can finally actually see Tennessee winning the SEC East. And we'll also get to that a little later and actually the next segment. And this is what I call college football over-under. Am I taking the over? Am I taking the under? We'll see. The website, the Golden Nugget, I think is what it's called. And they announced the win totals on every team from Air Force all the way down to Wyoming. So we're not going to go through every team. We're going to go through some of the big ones and some of the interesting ones, I think. So, yeah, let's get to it. Starting off, Alabama, over under 10. I'm probably going to say I would pass on that one. I feel like Alabama goes 10-2. By the way, these are regular season over-unders. This is not like including bowl games and postseason and conference championships and stuff like that. In that case, you could probably take the over for all these games. But Alabama, they've got USC, it's a tough game. Ole Miss on the road. Ole Miss is not as good as usual. Ole Miss on the road at LSU. I feel like they're going to lose at LSU. And they'll probably lose either USC or at Ole Miss. The USC game's a neutral site game, but I could say it's mostly on the road. So yeah, I'd say 10, I'd call that a push. I wouldn't bet on that. The next one, let's see. Oh, here's a good one. Houston, and I talked a lot about them in my last one. Not a ton, but I talked about them some. And I'll probably talk about them a lot in this one, too, because I am very bullish on Houston. I think they're definitely going to make a Power 5 bowl. And not a Power 5 bowl, a New Year's 6 bowl. And I think that they have a Big 12 realignment in their future. But anyway, they've got a tough schedule this year, which is why this is so low. They're a fantastic team. They've got Oklahoma and Houston, Cincinnati on the road, and Louisville and Houston on the docket. And that's a tough schedule. And keep in mind, they're in the American Conference. They've got Memphis on the road. They have not a lot of tough road games, but they've got Memphis on the road, and then they've got, like, SMU on the road, too. I would still stick with over. I say they beat Cincinnati, and I think they lose to Oklahoma. I think they upset Louisville, and I think they probably lose another game here. I say 10-2 for Houston, with an upset win over Louisville included in that. Okay, let's go to the next one. Scroll through here. Let's go with, what about LSU? LSU right now is favored at 10 over under, the same as Alabama. It's been a while that LSU's been on the same level as Alabama preseason. A lot of people are picking LSU to win the SEC, and I can see why. They look like they're a great team this year. And a 10? Now, I haven't started my college football preview yet. I've barely started. I've, like, done preliminary stuff, but I haven't, like, started putting together all conference teams. And really, I've done mock standings, but not my final standings for any of the conferences yet. But just from thinking about it, LSU is a real case to be the favorite coming out of the SEC as my SEC champion. And the schedule is not awful. They have Alabama and Ole Miss both at home. They don't draw Tennessee out of the East. Their only tough road game is at Texas A&M. And I guess you could say at Florida, but I don't know if Florida is going to be that great this year. The out-of-conference schedule is pretty favorable. No road games on the out-of-conference schedule. They've got Jacksonville State at home and Southern Miss at home. And then they've got Wisconsin on a neutral site. And I'm actually going to say over on this. I think they go 11-1. Maybe drop a game to Arkansas or Texas A&M on the road. Yeah, I'm going to say over 10 for LSU. Next up, we've got Ohio State, which is over under 9.5 here. And let's see. I don't know. I think I'm going to have to take the under on this one. And here's why. It's been a long time, probably, since Ohio State has went 9-3. Probably been at least 5 years, I think. Probably not since they've had an interim coach. But here's why. Let me state my case. All of their difficult games, not all, but most of their difficult games are on the road. Like, look at this. It's at Oklahoma, at Wisconsin, at Penn State, at Michigan State. And it's not a road game, but the week after at Michigan State, they have Michigan. And I think they come out of there 9-3. I don't see them winning on the road against Oklahoma. See them dropping a game to either Wisconsin or Penn State. And I see them losing to Michigan State, honestly. So I think Ohio State's not going to have a good year. And I'm a beast at segues, because, you know, another team that I don't think is going to have a good year, and it's my next over-under, is Oregon. And Oregon has been a powerhouse over the past 2 years. But right now, their over-under is at 8 wins. That's crazy. 8 wins for a team that's been in the national title contention for the past 2 years. Now, their out-of-conference schedule doesn't seem difficult. They've got UC Davis and Virginia at home. They travel to Nebraska, and that could be a sneaky game when teams on the West Coast travel across the country and play a team like Nebraska. I don't see them as being a real threat, but that could be a potential upset. I see them losing on the road to USC. Now, I'm not high on this team compared to some people, but I'm saying over on the 8 wins. I see them going 9-3 here, same as Ohio State. You're in a good position, Ohio State and Oregon, when going 9-3 is considered a bad year. So you should feel that bad. I'm a Virginia fan. So let's see. I got probably losing at USC, and they're probably going to drop a few conference games. Maybe they'll probably drop. They'll probably split Washington and Stanford. And then I could see them losing at Cal or at Utah. Because they've got quarterback struggles. I have no idea where they're going with quarterback. And another team I don't know where they're going with quarterback is the Michigan Wolverines. And this team, I feel they might be a little... people are sleeping on them a little bit. They're building up their hype preseason to just being a brand name. And I don't see that at all. I think Michigan is a team that could actually make the college football playoff this year. Their over-under for wins is 10. And the schedule starts off really favorably with them. 5 home games in a row. 6 of their first 7 are at home. And the 1 road game is at Rutgers. So I don't feel like they're going to have much problems with that. I could see them starting the season 7-0. Then maybe dropping a game to Michigan State. Maybe dropping a game to Iowa. I see them going 10-2. I think they'll pretty much run the table, and then they will lose 2 out of 3 of the Michigan State, Iowa, Ohio State road game trio. I say they go 10-2, which is the same as the over-under. So I hate it when they do even numbers. I feel like it should always be a decimal, so you can always take an over or the under. Because now in Alabama and Michigan, 2 of the top preseason teams, I've taken just a push. So I don't know. I say 10-2 for Michigan, and the next team I'm going to do is... let's see, maybe, let's go with TCU, because TCU is a team that a lot of people think are not going to have a good year, at least compared to what they've had the past few years. In the first year of the college football playoff, they were in contention for a spot, and they had a pretty good year last year. They had a fantastic game against Texas Tech, fun to watch. Schedule this year looks pretty tough, I'll be honest. Well, it seems fairly decent. It's not going to be like a crazy game. They've got a trap game, okay, at SMU. That's a game that I can see them losing. Like, SMU is not a fantastic team, but they're one of those teams that I have a gut feeling that they're going to pull a sneaky upset sooner or later. They're, like, going to probably go, like, 5-7, but I don't know. They're a team that I feel like could pull an upset. They're probably going to lose to Oklahoma. Sorry, what was the over-under? It was TCU 8. I'll take the over on 8. Well, will I? No, I'll say they go 8-4, maybe. I think, Yeah, I think they'll go 9-3. I'm taking the over on TCU. I feel like I haven't taken a single under yet. I did Ohio State, but other than that, I haven't taken a single under yet. So I take the over on 8 wins for TCU. All right, here we go. What's next? Let's do Washington, because Washington's a team everyone's crazy about. I ranked them, like, 20th in my preseason top 25. I don't know if I got that right. Way too early college football top 25. I put Washington 21st, so pretty much what I said. So I'm not as high on them as some people. Like, I think Athlon, it was either Athlon or Sporting News, picked them to win the Pac-12, and I do see that as a realistic possibility. Oregon's unusually weak this year, as is Stanford, and Washington's got, let's just look at their Pac-12 schedule, because they're probably going to go 3-0 out of conference. They've got Rutgers at home, Idaho at home, and Portland State at home. Let's just chalk up 3 wins for them there. Now, looking just at their schedule in conference, this is a team that could go 8-1 in the Pac-12 regular season, and I honestly mean that. That would mean they go 11-1 for the year, and this team has that upside to them. They could do that. They have Stanford at home, and they have USC at home, and they have Arizona State at home. The only, like, road games they have that would be challenging are Oregon. Would be Oregon, yeah. And Cal and Utah, they also have them on the road. Utah's going to be probably going to be an okay team this year. Not fantastic. Cal's probably not going to be a fantastic team this year. Probably going to go 4-8, maybe 5-7. So we're around there. They're not going to make a bowl. And I could see them going 11-1, probably 10-2, but definitely taking the over on Washington at 9 wins. I've ranked them so low because it's a team that I haven't really seen a much of over the past few years, so I'm going to wait until I can get my hands on some tape of them, maybe watch them, maybe read some. I haven't looked too much into college football over the past week because I just had my final end of the year test today. It was in science. It was hard. Now that all those tests are over and school's finally wrapping up, it's 6 end of the year tests. That's crazy. But now that school's finally wrapping up, I can more focus on football, doing my previews, which are always some of the most viewed things of the year for me. I review or make predictions for every single conference, every single team, I make an all-conference team for all the major conferences, and I think I did it for the group of 5 teams too last year. So I'm getting ready for that, guys. Now the next one is Tennessee at 9.5. Ooh, I haven't looked a lot into Tennessee lately, because they're just a team that I was like, okay, they're hyped up preseason. I get it. They're hyped up preseason every year. Like, there's nothing you can say to me that can convince me this isn't just preseason hype. And the SEC East has really declined over the past few years, and I feel it would be in the SEC's best interest to split up the East and the West. That way, you only get to see Alabama, LSU, and the SEC title game, because the past few years, it's been a foregone conclusion. Okay, the West is winning the title game. Alabama blew out. I don't even remember that. I think it was from Georgia. Georgia, or might have been Florida. I think it was, I don't remember. I don't even remember who they played, because they just destroyed them. And now my Wi-Fi is going out, so that's fantastic. So, I don't even have Tennessee's schedule pulled up, but the East is so bad, I could see it happening. Florida lost some people, but they've got, obviously Florida's always going to have a good recruiting class. They'll make a bowl for sure, 7-5 season, I'd say. So finally, Tennessee schedule has loaded, and it's about average, I would say. At least, at first glance. Of course, they've got that game against Virginia Tech at the Bristol Speedway. I would give Virginia Tech a chance to win that game. A lot of people are writing Tennessee basically in as the winner of that game. And Virginia Tech's not going to be the best team ever this year, but they've got a new coach in Justin Fuente. And so Georgia here, not Georgia, Tennessee, I've pulled up the schedule here. They have Florida at home and Georgia on the road. They have them back-to-back, so that's going to be kind of difficult. They're the big two contenders in the East this year. Georgia could go 9-3. They could win the East. It's definitely a possibility. They have Texas A&M on the road, too, but Texas A&M is probably going to have a down year this year. South Carolina wasn't very good last year. So let's say I would peg them right now at about maybe 10-2 before the season starts. Which is over, so I take the over on Tennessee. I'm saying 9-3. So under, I'm taking Tennessee on the under because I don't know, they're probably gonna lose either the Virginia Tech game or the Florida game. So they will lose Georgia. They're gonna lose Alabama. I feel like they'll drop another game. So I'm gonna say under for Tennessee. I feel like they'll 9-3, which is under the 9.5 over under. And that's gonna wrap up my last over under for today. If you like that, just tell me, and I will do more in the future and leave suggestions for teams. But we gotta get on to my next topic. I've spent so long on this. So this next one is kind of just a follow up from a question I did last week of who the Big 12 might add, and it's just me saying non Power 5 teams that are the most enticing to Power 5 schools, Power 5 conferences to join their league. And number one has gotta be Houston, because they've been fantastic the past few years. They've got the location, everything. They could join the Big 12. And something people haven't been talking about very much, but what if the Big 12 steals a team from the Pac-12? Who could the Pac-12 use to replace them? And I'm going to say Boise State. Boise State was at the top of the conference realignment discussion the past years. Boise State could even join the Big 12. No one is mentioning them in that scenario, because Boise State is never going to be that bad of a team, but they have sort of cooled down the past few years. I think this is going to be a big year for them. I see them going 10-2 probably. Maybe 11-1. Probably around 10-2, though. Mountain West is going to be actually not bad this year. But Boise State is a team that I could see drawing attention. Another team that I honestly could see, and it's kind of one that's out of the blue, you could say, that team is Marshall. They've went 10-3 each of the past, not 10-3, they've won 10 or more games each of the past 3 years, including they won 13-1 in 2014, and they won their conference title. And in 2013, they won their conference division title. They've won bowl game each of the past 3 years. It's not a team that many people are talking about, but it's a team that could honestly, they're one of the best teams in Power 5 football right now. Some more teams that I could see: Western Michigan, Western Kentucky, Northern Illinois, San Diego State, South Florida. South Florida is an interesting one for the Big 12. They could want to get a team from Florida and expand their recruiting pipeline there. If they could get recruits from Florida interested in the Big 12, that would be huge for the conference. And getting USF into the conference would be a big way to do that. So in general, I feel like this has been a pretty fun episode. Lots of hypotheticals. I just basically named off my top 7 Power 5 schools for this year. Houston number one. I already forgot. So I named San Diego State, Western Michigan, Northern Illinois, Houston, Western Kentucky, USF, and Marshall, San Diego State. I don't know if I already mentioned that. But all those teams are some of the top, those are my top few Power 5 teams, non-Power 5 teams for this year. But we have played that fun over-under game. We didn't break the news, but we shared the news about James Conner being cancer-free. And now we've got to get into some of the not-so-fantastic stuff. And that's the situation at Baylor University. Now, the Baylor Bears have become they've gone from nothing to one of the powerhouses in college football. And that sudden burst of money and fame and national brand name and everything that comes with that flew into the university after the football team started to be good might have clouded their judgment on some things. It seems like they've started to have some of a win or just do everything to win thing. And I'm just going to read a statement here. I'm not sure who it's from, but I think it's from the report from the Pepper Place. I don't know. Some law firm that was investigating that. They said this. Baylor failed to take appropriate action to respond to the reports of sexual assault and dating violence reportedly committed by football players. The choice made by football staff and athletics leadership in some instances posed a risk to campus safety and the integrity of the university. In certain instances, including reports of sexual assault by multiple football players, athletics and football personnel affirmatively chose not to report sexual violence and dating violence to an appropriate administrator outside of athletics. In those instances, football coaches or staff met directly with a complaint and or parent of a complaint did not report the misconduct. As a result, no action was taken to support complaints, fairly and impartially evaluate the conduct under Title IX, address identified cultural concerns within the football group, or protect campus safety once aware of a potential pattern of sexual assault. Now that is just deep stuff, and obviously really, really bad that the coaching staff, and Art Briles was fired, by the way, just so you know, but I was kind of surprised that Art Briles was fired. I was thinking more university president, maybe even the athletic director, but Art Briles got the hammer. I was expecting it, but I was braced for it. And the stuff here is just, it's so bad that the athletic department would just ignore some of these claims. It's just insane to me. And so here's another statement from the same place that says, the football staff conducted their own untrained internal inquiries outside of policy, which improperly discredited complaints and denied them the right to a fair, impartial, and informed investigation. And that is just, I just can't see me, but I just put my hand in my face, because that's crazy to me that that could happen at such a high-level university. And hopefully we get more on this. Baylor's a private university, so they're not being forced to release anything, but I hope they do. And as much as I hate saying this, I'm glad that Art Briles was fired, not because it's necessarily he's the only person doing it, but it sent a message to coaches across the country that if this stuff happens, you have to report it or you're going to get fired. And that's a good thing for college football, because you're student athletes, and if the students aren't safe, what's the point of the athlete part? God. The fact on Baylor football season this year, this is a football podcast, it's not just going to be me talking about the awful situation here, is that recruiting is going to be down, player morale is going to be down. They have a new coach, and it's May, the football season starts in like 90-some days. The defensive coordinator was promoted to head coach, interim head coach, and if this Baylor team hits 8 wins, it'll be a shock to me. We've all heard those stories, like the redeeming, everybody counts them out, because whatever, but I will be shocked if this team gets past 8 wins. I say 8 wins is the max. If they get 9 or more wins, I'd be really surprised, because you don't just take this type of thing lightly. Like, this could affect your team. And obviously, there are some players that did this. The NCAA is running their investigation. Baylor has agreed to comply with the NCAA. And there's going to be some people. It's going to be a lot of negative press. And, like, a few years ago, Baylor would have done anything to get in the national spotlight. And they were for a while, but now they still are, but even more, but in a negative way. And now, Art Briles has been a fantastic coach. He led RG3 to a Heisman year. Baylor won the Big 12 title. They were in college football playoff contention back-to-back years. I guess last year not as much after Seth Russell got injured. But Art Briles is a fantastic coach, but his legacy is going to go down as just not good. Like, you don't remember the great things a coach did. You're not going to be able to remember the things he did, because it's all, like, just clouded by this big thing that's just like, no. Think about what he did off the field. And he didn't necessarily do anything. He just, quite the opposite, in fact, he did do something. He should have reported this to someone. And I read somewhere, I don't know if it's, like, a reputable news source, I don't know if it's been confirmed, but I've heard from multiple sources that in some cases, the Waco police were told to just keep these complaints in a locked office and don't show them to people. And that's just, That's just crazy to me that that is something that's happening at a major university. I hope this brings some good for Baylor and the people that need it. And by the way, Art Briles is, I don't know, he's gonna have a tough job, tough time finding another job after this. So here's the key finding, and I have to quote someone on this because this is not directly from the report, this is kind of a summary. It's at Jake Trotter on Twitter, and he wrote that the university's student conduct process were wholly inadequate and consistently to provide a prompt and equitable response under Title IX, which means they did not respond to these results, these accusations in any way. And they actually had the university administrators directly discourage some complaints. They told people not to report things. Like, that's crazy to me. And the football program and athletics department leadership failed to take appropriate action in response to these reports. And this thing, it's there's three things in these scenarios when it comes to coaches. Did you know? When did you know? And what did you do about it? And if it goes, yes, a while ago, I ignored it, you should be fired. I call this the hard count, but this is more of a hard take. You can't cover up stuff like this with winning. Off the field things, small off the field things, you could cover those stuff up with winning. This type of big deal, that's not going away with winning. The Bears are gonna have to have a tough time. Just look at Penn State. Penn State went from a national powerhouse to now they're going 6-6 every year. I don't know. And Baylor wasn't even at the level of Penn State was. So I wish all the best to the players on that team that are honest and didn't do any of these things, because this is just a bad break for them. They're hardworking people, and so other people did some things, and now they're going to pay for it. So more on the story as it progresses. This story just broke today, so I'm sorry I don't have the biggest news on it. This was just reported a few hours ago, and I'm just trying to get this out as quickly as possible. End of the day, I hope this sends a message to all the other coaches out there. I'm the Crazy Sports Dude from crazysports.com and Twitter at Crazy Sport Dude. It's like Crazy Sports Dude, but without the S. And until the next time, I will see you.